You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the program, a preview of this spring's Sky Show. But first, two new reports raise questions about the risks associated with genetically engineered organisms and questions how much we really understand about the unintended spread of GEOs. Now, in one study, the Union of Concerned Scientists found traces of genetically modified, or GM, seeds in bags of conventionally produced corn, soybean, and canola seeds. And union researchers said, quote, "The door to seed contamination is wide open." But what are the consequences of that? That no pure GM-free crops exist? That certified organic food really isn't, because a lot of those seeds may be contaminated? And though the seeds found in the study have been approved and are widely grown, could there be a risk to human health when other genetically engineered crops, plants that produce drugs or vaccines, are widely grown? Are all these concerns being exaggerated? The Ecological Society of America considers scenarios like these, and in a position paper says more research is needed to answer these questions. We'll talk with the lead author about what we know about the risks of genetically engineered organisms, plus genetically engineered seeds. Do they threaten the survival of conventional crops? For example, can you be sure when you buy organically grown food that it's GM-free seeds? And what about the future? If genetically engineered organisms can't be kept out of our food supply, what happens when plants become factories for drugs, vaccines, and even plastics? What's to prevent the products from seeds from unintentionally reaching our dinner tables? Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Also, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Let me introduce my guests. Allison Snow is a professor in the Department of Evolution, Ecology, and Organismal Biology at The Ohio State University in Columbus, and the lead author of the Ecological Society of America's position paper on genetically engineered organisms and the environment. She joins us from her office in Columbus. Welcome to the program, Dr. Snow.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
You're welcome. C.S. Prakash is a professor of plant molecular genetics and the director of the Center for Plant Biotechnology Research at Tuskegee University in Alabama. He joins us from his office there. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Is it Prakash or Prakash?
Prakash.
I knew I'd get it wrong. Now join the Science Friday alumni of all the people I've mispronounced their names. Forgive me. Let me ask you, Dr. Snow, first off, in a recent commentary in the journal Nature, you make the distinction between genetically engineered organisms, or things that are being called GEOs now, and genetically modified GMOs, organisms. Why that? Is there a real distinction, or is it just verbiage here?
Well, I like to make that distinction, but in general usage, they can be used interchangeably. To me, the word genetically modified includes regular breeding by crossing, like crossing one variety of plant with another, which is what we've been doing for a long time. And now it's taken on sort of a new meaning to mean transgenic or genetically engineered. So if you just say GMO, you might mean old kinds of crops and new kinds of crops, whereas genetically engineered organisms, that's a new technology. That's more like engineering, and I think it's much more powerful, much more precise, and it's very new, so it's raised a lot of new questions. Just very briefly, with engineering, you can take genes from bacteria and viruses and put them into a plant and get a new trait that you never could have gotten any other way that could be worth a lot of money. It probably has a patent on it. Mm-hmm. So it's really much more sophisticated, and I think it's more precise to say engineering as opposed to genetic modification.
And I think it's this engineering aspect of it that frightens a lot of people.
It does. People don't like the idea. Just some people have a gut reaction to it that it's dangerous. Other people think it's very exciting. And so it engenders both kinds of responses from people, depending on a lot of things about your own philosophy and your knowledge of science.
And Dr. Prakash, you think this is a beneficial technology?
Yeah, well, certainly. And Dr. Snow is very correct that this is a very precise technique. And one must understand that we have been kind of modifying our crop plants for thousands of years, taking plants from wild plants from nature and changing them and improving them. And clearly, the biotechnology, while the term engineering is frightening to many people. One must understand this is just a logical extension of changes that we've been doing all along. And the benefits, when you look at it, the tremendous reduction in pesticide usage. For instance, in the United States, we have saved something like 46 million pounds of pesticides in 1 year by growing these crops, and about 2.5 million gallons of fuel that have been saved. And it goes on and on, huge productivity and hardier crops, especially for developing countries, in our ability to feed the growing population. And so far, we have been growing these crops for the past 10 years. This year alone, we have planted them around the world in 18 countries on about 150 million acres. And when you look at the track record, and it's almost impeccable, we have not had one single instance of any problem with this on human beings or on the ecosystem.
What about, Dr. Snow, what about the concern of the Union of Concerned Scientists who are worried, and I'll read you their conclusion, seeds of traditional varieties of corn, soybeans, and canola are pervasively contaminated with low levels of DNA sequences derived from transgenic varieties. That even though you think you maybe have a bag of seed, you know, that is of the old variety, it's being now contaminated, probably unintentionally, with these new transgenic varieties.
Well, I think that's a very interesting finding, and to people in the field, it's not a big surprise. There's another name for it besides contamination, which is, the technical name is adventitious presence.
Who wrote that?
Sorry, but that just means added by accident. And,
but the word advantageous is in there,
adventitious,
right? Adventitious. Oh, adventitious. I'm sorry.
Well, some people think it's advantageous, too. But anyway.
Do you think it's advantageous?
No.
Okay.
I think it's, I just wouldn't necessarily use the word contamination unless you know there's a consequence of the foreign DNA being in there. And to me, as a scientist, I want to know what is the consequence? Is there going to be a health effect of this 1% or less presence? And then there are also trade issues, which are very important, which is what this report addresses, too, things with the problems that organic farmers might face.
Such as?
Well, if there is a zero tolerance threshold for no GM products in organic food, which is what many people in that area would like to see, that's going to be very hard to achieve, and this study illustrates very clearly why.
Dr. Prakash?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is an interesting study, but it's absolutely of no consequence whatsoever, because this Union of Concerned Scientists, they claim it's essentially they want a zero tolerance on seed purity. And if anyone has just ventured into a seed shop or talked to any seed specialist, you would know that there is no such thing as 100% pure seed. I mean, you can't even get 100% pure gold. And if you look at the seed standards, for instance, the seed agencies specify that in 50 grams of seeds, you could have two seeds from other crops. You could have 50 weed seeds. You could even have disease seeds, about 90 of them. And so if you find a very, very minuscule percentage of seed from other, say, GM crop, and those GM crops have already been approved and tested, it's really of no consequence. It's trying to find a speck of corn in your rice porridge. And so it's more of an emotional argument designed to scare people against a technology that has tremendous positive potential. And so there are certain issues, like Allison clearly pointed out, on if it has a health consequence, like a pharmaceutical drug gene or some protein that may have a health effect, then we need to be conscious of that. Otherwise, I think this is a study that at best be ignored.
But we hear reports on the Union of Concerned Scientists paper talks about the future where many of these crops are going to be making pharmaceuticals, drugs, certainly, biologics, vaccines, antibodies, blood products, enzymes. I mean, I could go on naming these kinds of drugs that we're making, having plants make for us. What happens if these seeds get mixed in with the seeds we're having for cornflakes in the morning?
Exactly. No, again, it ignores the fact that we have very, very high standard of regulation for those crops. And there's also a penalty. A company that breached that was recently fined about $2.5 million.
Well, but you yourself said it's impossible to keep them apart. And if somebody's allergic to these or has a reaction to these seeds, what do you tell them? Well, you know, they pay the penalty, or it's just you're living in a world where you're just going to have to adjust to it.
Well, you see, we are talking about different issues here. Even amongst those plants that are producing drugs. There are a lot of them that really would not have much health consequence, especially those that are related to antibodies. And there are certain proteins that would have a health consequence. And many of them would be grown in very small quantities in isolated greenhouses, far, far removed. For instance, corn is grown in Arizona where there is no corn being grown. And it is not grown in Iowa, where much of the corn is grown. And so we do have some very pragmatic standards and regulations that govern that. And again, as Allison's the Ecology Society report showed, there is clearly a room for improvement. And scientists are always working and to see how we can improve it. There are containment standards, like we could put these genes in chloroplasts, for instance, and we could make these crops sterile. And so there are various ways of achieving it, yet reaping the benefit. We all want to live healthy, and we don't want to be paying through our nose for those drugs. So this is a very good way to go.
Dr. Snow, you agree?
Yes, I agree. I think the thing is that this report is looking towards the future, and it's raising some very important issues. And if we have a small amount of this spread of genes that aren't supposed to be there now, what's going to happen in the future? And as Dr. Prakash said, we need to be careful about that. But I sort of agree and disagree. I think the report is going to stimulate a lot of healthy debate, and it's going to help improve what USDA and other agencies are doing, because everyone will look much more closely at how these experimental plants that are not approved for consumption, how those are grown, and make sure that those genes aren't moving into the food supply.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to the phones. Is it Suleiman in Tallahassee? Is that you?
Yes. I was wondering if it would be possible to actually grow those genetically altered plants and animals on separate farms and greenhouses so they wouldn't get mixed up with the natural ones to solve the problem.
Dr. Prakash, that's
yes,
what you were saying.
Certainly that could be done. When we are talking about crops, special crops producing medicinal compounds like vaccines and therapeutic drugs, and that is something that is already being practiced. But on the other hand, when we are growing for food, for instance, 80% of the soybean that we grow in the country is genetically modified. And so we could look back and see there has not been any health or ecological consequence of that. And unless somebody wants to pay 10 times more for those soybeans, there's not going to be any need to grow them so separately, because there is no health or environmental consequence of those GM crops. And one must understand here, again, that we have been modifying crops for a long time, and you can get the same traits. For instance, herbicide-tolerant wheat, we could create a mutant by natural means. We could also develop in a genetic modification method.
But you're not going to get pharmaceuticals naturally to cross into a...
Well, 30% of our drugs come from plants or have their origin in plants. Look at aspirin. It came from weeping willow.
Now we have, if I could interrupt, now we have the potential to design more powerful genes, single genes. And I think a big issue here is what organism do you want to use for your biological factory? Do you want it to be corn, which is outcrossing and shipped all over the world? Or do you want it to be something like a tomato grown in a greenhouse or a tobacco plant that no one eats?
And who decides that?
The industry. The industry decides it, and then it will be up to a lot of different agencies and the public to weigh in on whether this should be approved in the future.
We're talking about genetically modified organisms this hour at Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Would that be something that a regulatory agency might, if not the Department of Agriculture?
We have three agencies that govern the release of these GM crops. We have U.S. Department of Agriculture. We have Environmental Protection Agency, and then we have Food and Drug Administration. And so we have a very substantial regulatory oversight of these crops.
But they have not said where or what kinds of plants that should be used, like Dr. Snow was talking about.
No, they're not going to be putting restrictions, but they're going to be looking at every crop for any purpose on a case-by-case basis. So if there are certain crops that would have a risky scenario, clearly they're not going to make it.
Dr. Snow, you're saying a risky scenario is growing in corn, are the most ubiquitous of among the most ubiquitous of all our crops.
It would take a lot of effort to ensure the public and get the public's trust, I think, that pharmaceutical-producing corn was safe. Even if you know one company could do it, how are a lot of companies going to do this all over the world? How can you really guarantee to the public that this is safe? It's going to be a big challenge. And so there's a lot of discussion about whether there might be better choices besides corn, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Vincent in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Vincent.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to respectfully comment on both doctors' comments. And my wife and I are both eat predominantly organic. We are vegan. And there's been actually a lot of studies. Lundberg Rice Farms, who's organic, has talked about how the genetically modified rice is infiltrating into their organic rices, and they're having a lot of problems. And I personally don't believe it's anyone's right to say that there can be no, you know, no damages caused by genetically modified, because there's simply no way to tell. You know, if someone's allergic to peanuts and they eat corn and they have an allergic reaction because it's been genetically crossed with a peanut or something, or even being vegan, I'm very, very hesitant to buy something that's not organic, because it could have been crossbred with, you know, a fish in Alaska to cause it not be damaged by the cold.
And so now you're worried that you can't get purely vegan anymore.
Oh, I'm very, very, very concerned. You know, and I don't. I believe the doctor is very, very sincere when he doesn't believe that there's any problems caused by this. But I don't think it. I don't think you can be bold enough to say that. It takes years and years sometimes. People don't know where cancers come from. People don't know a lot of things, and I think to boldly say no damage is caused is a little bold.
Dr. Prakash?
Right. Yeah, I can empathize with this caller. I'm a vegetarian myself. And
wonderful.
I can assure him there's not been one single animal gene put into any of our food crops that are commercially grown.
Right.
And these are, again, scary scenarios by groups that are opposed to technology that keep making this case. And also the peanut, it's very important. I have a friend who is very, very allergic to peanut, and so I know the consequence of that. So there's not one single allergen gene that has been placed into any of our food crops because of tremendous amount of problems. Even if the benefits are overwhelmingly big, even a small amount of problem with that, we are not going to take mm-hmm. that. And on the other hand, we must understand the organic, it's an important issue. But, you know, it is no more different than if I'm growing GM seed and if I don't want any organic seed. There's no such thing as organic seed, by the way. If I don't want non-GM seed in it, I cannot help it. That is the way the food is grown. It is grown in dirt. We transport it in the same trucks. And we processed in some of the same places. So we have always lived with certain level of so-called contamination. And as long as this contamination is not of health or environmental consequence, then it's really of no consequence.
All right. It's too late to close the door on GM foods. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more with my guests, C.S. Prakash and Allison Snow. Take your questions. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note. On Monday's Talk of the Nation, the continuing series, Who Owns the Issue? National Security and War, the issue Monday on this hour in Talk of the Nation. For the rest of the hour today, we're gonna finish up with Drs. Prakash and Snow. I want to just a quick closing comment, Dr. Snow. Where do you think, to allay people's fears, I mean, what do you think we need to do?
That's a big question. People have a lot of different concerns. We wrote this position paper to address some of the environmental concerns, and we think that science has a role to play in answering some of the questions that people have. And I think another issue for food safety and things like that, the more people learn about these issues, if they can just learn from new sources and expand their horizons, I think we can start to have some better discussions. Right now, things are very polarized, and it's unusual for environmental groups to communicate directly with industry and back and forth. It's too polarized, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But we need to address that basic problem of communication.
We don't need any more supervision, then, of this research or its effects on the population, possible effects.
Well, I don't work on the health effects, so I can't really comment on that. As far as the environment is concerned, I think we always need to be vigilant and watching, make sure we're asking the right questions and looking at new types of genetically engineered fish and insects and trees, and just make sure that we can avoid problems. If we haven't got problems now, that's a wonderful thing. Let's keep it that way and be very careful about what we release in the future.
Dr. Prakash, closing, you're basically saying there's no such thing. Your last comments were there's no such thing as non-GM modified food anymore. Get used to it, basically.
Not really. I wouldn't put it that bluntly, but the problem is it is nothing much to be afraid of. That's really what I'm saying. And I really agree with Dr. Snow that we need to be vigilant, and that science is going to play an increasing role in ensuring that it is safe, but it could be made even more safer. And I think from a general public point of view, we need to point to the benefits. We need to point to the safety record that we have. And we need to assure them that we have a very good regulatory oversight of these crops and animals or whatever that are going to be released. And if there's any problem, we have a fairly good mechanism that we can catch them before they are released.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me. C.S. Prakash, Professor of Plant Molecular Genetics and Director of the Center for Plant Biotechnology Research at Tuskegee University in Tuskegee, Alabama. Thank you for coming on today. Mm-hmm. And Allison Snow, Professor of Biology at The Ohio State University in Columbus and lead author of the Ecological Society of America's position paper on genetically engineered organisms and the environment. Thank you both for taking time to be with us.